What follows is another interview with a UFO sky pilot. In the near future, I'll have a book coming out called UFO Sky Pilots, which documents 36 or more people who have claimed they have flown the UFO. Today I have Dolly Safran, who is another witness, another person who claims that she has interacted with the craft, which is alive, become one with it, and then has maneuvered the craft around. So here's the interview. Please enjoy.
T-minus 25 seconds. 20 seconds and counting. T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Zero, all engine running. Liftoff, we have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Tower cleared.
Here, we got a roll program.
And as Apollo 11 does its roll program, this podcast now does its roll program. The tape is rolling. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. My name is Grant Cameron, and you're listening to the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. Thank you for taking time from your life to be here.
Okay. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. This is Grant Cameron in Canada, and I am joined this morning by my co-hostess with the mostest from the land of Lincoln. Sitting in her sunroom, which makes me very envious because I always wanted a sunroom in my house. Nicole Sackage, how are you doing?
Hello, Grant. I'm doing great today.
Beautiful.
Nice to be here with you.
Super. And I've always said that I've been in the UFO business since 1975, and I've always said that if you want to know what's going on with UFOs, you can't be standing on the overpass watching the cars drive by. Sooner or later, you got to stop one of the cars, get inside one of the cars, and find out where everybody's going. And today, we have an experiencer who's been in one of the cars who can basically tell us a little bit more about what's going on, Dolly Safran. And it's been 16 years ago yesterday that my dear father passed, and he was a big jazz guy, had a big, massive collection of jazz music. And I used to hear the song Hello, Dolly, from the 1969 musical, and it was sung by Barbara Streisand, and a lot of people may not know that Barbara Streisand's stepson is also an experiencer, and I've interviewed him a couple of times, and he's pretty open about his experience. So Dolly Safran began her journey as a generational contactee. Her father, an airborne ranger in the U.S. Army, was also a contactee from early age, which I'd like to hear about. Growing up was challenging for Dolly, as occasions of disappearing, she had disappearing from her house. She had psychic phenomena and unseen friends caused great anxiety for her mother. She served as a civilian working in the U.S. Department of the Treasury and also in the Army as a Department of Defense employee. Life changed suddenly. She was happy to become a zookeeper and an animal baby mama for a private zoo and a sanctuary in Florida, but apparently she's moving, so that may have changed. She is an experiencer, which is the main thing that I'm interested in. She's been on board, she's had a lot of UFO experiences, and I want to welcome Dolly Huggle. Hello, Dolly, how are you doing?
Hi, Cameron, I'm wonderful, and thank you for having me here. I appreciate it.
Beautiful. Yeah,
I want to sing now, Grant. I want to be like, well, hello, Dolly.
You got to do it like Louis Armstrong, though. When Louis Armstrong sang it, that was the famous version.
I can't sing it like Streisand, that's for sure. I don't have those vocal capabilities, but yes, hello, Dolly. I'm so
happy. Hi, Nicole. Nice to be here. I know, I'm excited.
Yeah. So you've got a book. You've got a book that tells your story. Tell us a little bit about the book, and then tell us a little bit about how this thing all started for you.
The book is called Symmetry, A True UFO Adventure. It was written by Preston Dennett. I contacted him, we're coming up on 6 years ago now. He was actually, when I first decided to go out and decide to bring my story out, I was looking for someone, couldn't find anyone yet. And my contact, Talara, actually named him and told me where to find him. So I went on YouTube, I looked up his videos, I found the very first one he ever put on. I thought that was a good place to start. And I listened to it and I was shocked. And I was like, this is it. This is who I'm going to contact. I emailed him and he absolutely called, emailed me back within 24 hours. And it just went from there.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's what, 6 years ago?
Yes. Yep. He spent all that time until the book was released vetting me and interviewing me. We've probably got a couple hundred hours of interviews on tape. And I've given him tons and tons of evidence that he went through and things like that. Yes.
And you passed the test.
Apparently, yes.
So tell us how it started. How did this all start that you have become sort of what I call a UFO experiencer?
Well, I've had experiences my whole life, but they weren't cohesive in line. You know, it wasn't a total memory. I began to think I was crazy. My mom didn't like the subject. She discouraged it all the time. Every time something happened in the house, she'd freak out. And so I was about 14 years old and I decided that I'm proving it this one way or the other. I'm done. I'm either crazy and need help or this is real. And it took me about 6 months and the opportunity finally showed up. I was out in the backyard one day. I took astronomy lessons. I was out with my scope. 1 o'clock in the morning on a school night, my dad's like, go to bed. You know, yeah. I'm like, okay. So I packed down, got my jammies on, went to my window. I only sleep 2 hours a day.
Wow.
And yeah. And I was looking out the window because I'm up most of the night. And Orion was up that night. It's my favorite constellation. The sky was perfectly clear. And I start to see stars that aren't stars. And I'm counting them in my head. And I'm like, oh my God, there's at least 100 of them. They paired off in twos. They went different directions, east, west, north, and south. But two of them came down over our area. One came down over Dadeland Mall area, west, east of me, in the Kendall district. And the other one, I live out in the Glades, came down over us. I watched it come all the way down. Things started happening around us right away. We lost power right away. The trees started swaying. There was no wind that day. It couldn't have been, it freaked me out, okay? I mean, they were really whipping around. And I saw a craft and I'm memorizing it. I'm thinking, oh my God, you know? As I was looking at the craft and I got up to the portholes, I saw one being in each port and they were looking dead at me. And I freaked out. I freaked completely out. And I went, no, dive, dive. And I went to dive under my bed. I didn't know what else to do. And I never made it under my bed. I froze in mid, you know, jump down. The room exploded in blue, white light. And my memory went, I was gone. I woke up the next morning. It was early. It's about 4 o'clock in the morning, 3:34. I had someone else's jammies on and they were messed up. And I was on the floor of my room. I was really angry. I started crying. I was like, what the hell just happened to me? Oh my God. And it hit me. And I just realized, oh my God, this has got to be real. How did I get into these clothes? Okay. That was my first attachment to it. So then I got up because it was a school day and I got in the shower and I got cleaned up. And, went in the kitchen. My mom was cooking breakfast for my dad. He always left every day about 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. And the radio was playing. She said, make coffee. And I sat down and my brain's going 90 miles an hour. I'm thinking, how do I tell her? How do I tell her? I need to talk to her about it. This is the one person who would never talk about it. I tried to. I said, you know, mom, do you see anything last night? Y'all hear anything? Lights, anything? And she's like, no, what are you talking about? And I'm like, well, you know, like a UFO. And she whirled on me. She said, no, stop talking. So I gave up. I was still upset about it. I was still sitting there thinking, I got to talk about this. How do I do it? And the radio changed from, I can't remember his name right now. Anyway, it went to the news and the newscaster came on. And the first thing out of his mouth was, two Dadeland cops saw UFOs last night. And they described the whole thing. I lost my mind. I went nuts. I started jumping up and down. I started yelling, oh my God, this is real. She whirled on me again and said, get out of my kitchen. You're dreaming. Okay. I ran out because I'm like, what do I do? I ran dead into my dad who was trying to come in and he said, calm down. I mean, I was over the top. I was freaking out. I almost was crying at that point. He said, go calm down. Just go calm down. I knew how to meditate by then. We lived right next to the Hare Krishnas in the Everglades and they taught me. I used to climb their wall. Anyway, so I went in the bathroom, shut the door, turned the light out. It's the only private place in the house when you lock the door. And I thought, how do I do this? This is real. And I started replaying the whole thing from the very beginning in my mind. And I kept telling myself, you got to remember. When I got up to the point where the blue light hit, it was like something slammed into me. Okay. I was flooded with information. It made me sick. I mean, I started shaking. I was ill. I was like, oh my God, I got a migraine from it. And I realized what had happened at that point. I saw it. It's like, you don't get memories can come back incrementally, but a lot of the times when you wake up, they're there, you know?
Yeah.
And I had to sort through it. And what happened to me was when the light hit, I saw an energy ribbon come down. I could not move. I was frozen. I couldn't move my body. I saw the two beings come down this energy ribbon. One of them came over to me and he walked me to where the ribbon was. And he took my hand in his hand and put it on the ribbon and everything changed. I saw a white light appear, you know, I was like engulfed in it and I could see the room and everything, but it was like opaque. And we started going up. I mean, I was weightless and I went through my ceiling, which was disconcerting as hell. I went through the tree and we went up to where this craft was hovering. And I noticed that it's dipping. It's like trying to stay in place, but it dips and it sways from side to side a little bit. And I'm like, how am I getting in there? Because the ribbon didn't go in the door. It was like right up alongside it. And I thought, oh my God, what are they going to do? He shoved me in the door feet first. And I went onto the floor. There was a woman sitting there and I looked over at her and I was like, oh my God, I know who this is. This is a tall gray. She's female. And I call her mama. I've known her my whole life. And I knew who she was. At that point, I became so violently ill, I puked on myself. I mean, it just my whole body let go. Mm-hmm. They cleaned me up. They got me, you know, something else to wear. I was still shaking. I was going into dead shock. I mean, I was cold. I was like, you know, and they decided to walk me around the craft. They figured if I grounded to it, it would help me, you know, settle in. And they took me all over the craft. They even showed me my own quarters, which freaked me out. I found a brush I had not seen in a year. And I was like, oh my God, this is my brush. I left it here. Oh my God. They gave me something to drink. They sat me down. I finally was like calming down, you know, and then I hear this voice in my head. Hey girl, how you doing? How are you now? And I realized who that was Talara. That's the ship. He is all ET craft are flown by psychic. They're psychic. They're indwelt. Like we indwell our bodies. This is a fifth dimensional non-corporeal being who actually indwells the craft. The craft is designed for this specifically. The crafts are somewhat biological. They have biological components to them, and that helps him ground to it. I've known him my whole life.
Are you saying the craft has a name?
Yes. The entity that indwells him, the craft, is called, I call him Talara. It's a long name that he has, and I can't pronounce the whole thing. So there was one part of it I could pronounce, okay. And that's it. And he let me get away with calling him Talara. So that's who he is.
Talk a little bit about, I'm just coming out with a book on people who have flown the craft. Have you flown the craft? And can you describe how this process works? Describe it in somewhat as much detail as you can as to how this works.
All ET crafts are flown psychically. Okay. They don't have what you would call technological components that are tied together at all. Not at all.
Okay.
Talat is in charge of it. He's indwelling it and he's running the entire show. They're what I call, they're very elegant in their design and how they function. They have a nuclear base. It's a very small nuclear chamber where they fire up an element that is so powerful that it creates a graviton wave, okay? The element is, they don't have to use a lot of it because it's that powerful, and it's a type of nuclear element that it burns itself out right away. In other words, it leaves no waste. It's and it only takes a small amount. They use that to go interdimensional. They use it to mostly power themselves up outside our atmosphere. They don't dare come in with that running because it's too hot. It would kill. It could kill us. It's, if they got too close to you with it, it would burn you up. Yeah. So when they come into atmosphere, they go to batteries. They have most, like the smaller craft have three batteries. The larger they are, either the bigger the battery or they have two or three more situated in the craft. Generally, when they come down, they go to batteries just as they're entering atmosphere, and they drop their plasma field because something that hot when they're running it creates an entire plasma field outside their field. They have the smaller craft have three emitters in them, two up top, one down front. And the bigger the craft, the more emitters. And it creates two fields. One engulfs the craft itself. And then the other one is what skiffs or glides on electromagnetism. They surf it or they run it like a boat on waves in the water, only this is all magnetism. Our planet has plenty of that, and we have gravitational. When our electromagnetosphere from our core shoots out, you know, magnetically, and they come in and they ride the waves of it. It's like being on a boat, okay? When I say it's psychic, I'm not kidding you. Talata's running the show mostly, but they have a pilot as well. The pilot is in charge of knowing where you're going, how to get there, creating a light gate for interdimensional travel, and basically deciding when you're inside a magnetosphere, inside a planet's atmosphere, navigating where you're going and stuff like that, landing, pilots all in control of that. Talata's just running everything else. The pilot and Talata, or the ship's indwelt, are in total communion with one another. They have, it's an electromagnetic ball, and it when it's initialized, it gets really big and it's above the pilot, okay? And the pilot uses, you know, I use my hands and I guide it. I'll connect to it. I don't touch it because it'd kill me, but I connect cyclically to it. I remote view into this field and send my consciousness into it. Talata's already there waiting for me and we work together. And when I break contact, he's running, but I'm still on my own piloting. It's not hard to do once you learn how to do it, but it's, you know, you have to have your abilities have to be very fine honed to do that. When you look inside a craft, you don't see a lot of stuff, you know, yeah. It's not that way. The crafts are capable of changing their shape. They can add space to themselves. They can get bigger if they need to. They accommodate many different things. They are photoelectric. In other words, they can become transparent. They can, like a cuttlefish, they can create fields around the outside and the inside. They can create light. They can make themselves invisible to you. You know, they can look like anything in the environment because they mimic it. They mirror it. But it's like a cuttlefish kind of thing. Talata's doing it. Inside, Talata lights up the inside, and he even knows what your preferences are for color patterns, and he'll accommodate you that way. He'll give you what you is calming to you. A lot of times when they bring people on board, you know, to check them out, they will accommodate them by using color to help calm them down, you know, make them feel at home.
So where were you able to go? Have you been off planet or to other places? And how long does it take to get there?
I've been off planet. We have a pretty big galaxy and there's a lot of life in it. I've mostly been with the Tall Grays, and I've been to their world. It's in the Orion Cluster. I've been to outside the galaxy. I've been into the universe, pretty much. I've been to what they call, you would call it a Dyson sphere. It's like a planetoid. And it's like a way station for them when they're crossing to galaxy to galaxy, you know, doing what it is they do. And you can get repaired. You can rest for a few days. It's draining when I fly. I mean, in other words, I'm using a lot of mental energy, my ability, and it wears me out quick. And so it's a place for us to stop, rest, you know, eat, whatever we need to do. When we travel, dimensionally travel, we go outside space-time. This universe is huge, okay? And everything in our universe is a construct, physical construct. It's in the, everything you see physical is in the third dimension. There's one, two, three dimensions, and it's all hard because it's very dense, gravitationally put together. Every molecule is packed in, and we all look solid. We feel solid. There's solid planets. It generates energy, that kind of thing. Inside that construct are 12 dimensions, 12 different planes of existence, okay? The ETs were physical like we are. They're related to us, actually. But they evolved past that and were actually able to start becoming interdimensional. And the beings in the interdimensional realms made contact with them. That's why all the craft are indwelt, because that's their technology for being here, okay? That psychic ability. Interdimensional beings can transform light. They can transform energy. They can build it. They can create with it. They can do all kinds of things with it. And it helps when you have a group of individual entities coming up, and they're ready to start transitioning up into that, and they teach them. And so the ETs that you're meeting here or coming here are in that transition as well. We all learn. We all evolve, okay? They are so far advanced of us, most people here would think of them as like light and magic. They don't, it's hard to conceive of something that immense, you know, that ability. They can levitate you physically in this dimension. They can transport you physically up into the craft. That's what that light ribbon is that comes down. That's actually a mental ribbon they create to bring you up interdimensionally. They throw you at it.
One more question, then I'll let Nicole ask a question. You mentioned the fact that they're able to morph to change the ship and change the size inside the ship. Can you describe that? Because other people have described that, you know, the craft looks small on the outside, and then when you get inside, it's big. Can you describe a little bit more about that?
Yeah. When you're traveling with the little AI guys, they have an entity that they've created. It's AI. It's biological AI. It's advanced. It's autonomous in that it can take something that it has to do and then logically work through that on its own. It doesn't need to be in constant contact, but it can be turned off. Okay. They are short. They're only just under 3 feet tall. They're not very big at all. And a craft will just be on the inside big enough to let them in. You know, first time I went up, he actually expanded everything because I'm tall, and he had to give me headroom. So the room just got bigger, you know, he moved it out for me. They can create benches, tables, you know, all kinds of stuff. They can make you think you're at home even. At each individual need while you're on board a craft, they can provide by expanding or contracting. There are beings in this universe who are, you know, there's a micro universe and a macro, and that there are beings in interdimensional beings who are very small, and they accommodate them as well. They transfer them sometimes from one dimension to the next. That's an interesting thing. And
Wow.
Yeah.
Dolly, what were your living quarters like? You said like where your brush was, like what was that space? What had made for you? Yeah.
I had a room. It was just for sleeping and reading. It had a place for me to wash my face. It had an interesting kind of a sink. I did have a bathroom because they do go to the bathroom like we do, but it's not like we do. It's not all running water. The closest I could come to would be like a composting toilet. Okay. Everything they use is either recycled immediately or destroyed. You know, they can make it evaporate. The clothes that they wear are constantly recycled. They only wear things one time, and then it's recycled and you get a new suit. Their suits are one piece. I did have like a little compartment where I had two suits that, you know, were ready for me. They weren't, didn't belong to me. They were just always there for me to put on. They were two piece because I had to put them on. Some of their suits, and this is going to be hard to explain, actually are put on them. It's one piece, no zippers, no nothing. And you get, it's put on you. And it's generally when they're going to make contact, and it protects them and from the environment that they're in. They shield them from, you know, the environment, hot, cold, germs, stuff like that. I call them, you know, the body suit, you know, and they come in different colors that they make. My room had a little side table and a long bed that fit me just exactly. It was like, you'd call it twin size. It wasn't like a mattress. It was like a gel. Okay. It was that comfy. Like when you got on it, it's hard to roll over because you kind of like ooze into it. Okay. I slept really good on it. The walls lit up for me. So I never had like a light in there or anything. And it would come on when I walked in the door. The lights would jump up when I came in the door. It was very quiet also. I didn't hear anything. And if they wanted to communicate me, it's all psychic. So I didn't need an alarm. I really didn't need much, just that. I had not sheets on it, but I had a cover that I put on me when I was cold, which was rare because onboard craft is kind of warm all the time. They like it hotter. So
nice. What was lingering for me with that? Oh, you talked about this connection with the craft. And if you're not on craft, is there somebody else there to replace you? Or where's the craft when you're not on board? And how are pilots chosen, or how are people brought on board? Does the pilot choose that, or does the craft choose who comes on board?
Talata is aware of everybody that is in contact with that particular craft. They all have their own areas that they go to, and it's chosen for them, you know, who they take care of. Mm-hmm. And so the craft always knows where we're going. I do now because I've gone to so many for so long that I just know where I'm going. I want to preface this real quick. The reason that you're brought on craft, okay, you're brought on pretty much the same way I was. They can transfer you up an energy ribbon, or they can land and actually walk you in. Okay. It's very rare for one to land because it's dangerous. You can be hurt by that craft. It's super duper hot. It's radioactive, and they have to do a long cool down process to get it okay. Okay. Sometimes they will, a craft coming down and it's in the cool down process will create a field around it that's really weird, and it interacts with the atmosphere and all the chemicals in it, and they'll drop what you know as angel hair all over the place, but that actually kind of clears the radiation from it. So you're either brought up an energy ribbon or you're walked in. Mm-hmm. Once you get on board, you're brought on board for two reasons, and two reasons alone. One, to keep in contact with you. They know who everybody is that they contact, and it's pretty much everybody. Some people refuse and will not ever go with them again, and they don't. They let them alone, but they will contact you once in a while. For the last 80 years, our magnetosphere has been going down. Our magnetosphere has lost 40% of its ability to block gamma radiation from coming in at us. We are being affected by it. Gamma radiation absolutely affects your DNA. It derazes it. It makes you sick. All the cancer, autoimmune disorders, mental issues, heart issues, the list is endless, has been getting worse and worse and worse and worse during this, what's going on. And they're trying to keep our genome up. We went through a period in the 60s and 70s where the nations of the world realized that men were becoming sterile, and so were women. They were losing the ability to have babies. It was at that point that it was decided to help with that also. Okay. People complain about, oh, my DNA was taken. Oh, you bet. They're watching it. They're making sure that you're okay. They're trying to hold us up, bolster us. This is one of their main goals, because what's coming is they need you, and you need to be in pretty good health for what's coming. They want to make a rescue. That is coming as well. They will give you a physical examination. They're regular contactees. They pretty much give you the option of being wide open, awake about it. You know, how are you handling it? Is this going to involve your life here too much or too little? In other words, you still got to live your life here. You're in a cycle. You're supposed to be learning. It's karmic. And you have to do that. That's why you're here. Okay. That aside from what's coming is a big deal to them. Okay. So that's what's going on. That's why you're contacted. That's why you're on board. While you're on board, they do your examination. They check you out. And then they play with you for a while. They let you look around. They'll talk to you. They'll let you sit in a seat. You want to go for a flight? Want to fly? They'll even start searching for people who can. Because one of the greatest things that's coming for us is that when they do make the rescue, they need humans on board flying. They need us. Because if when they come down, if you open the door and there's a tall gray standing there, a lot of people are going to go, no way. They need to see us. And that's one of the reasons I chose to fly. And that's what I do. So.
Wow. This has come up a lot. This part of our conversation has come up a lot in the community lately.
Okay.
I think it's finally clicking for newer people in the community that there are what they know as abductees that do choose to work in this scenario. Yes. And I think they look at it as people taking other people, and that's shocking. But the way you explained it, which I knew you would do it very well, it is this help. And I think that ties into your zookeeping a little bit, maybe, like,
yeah,
understand the snatch and physical part of it for the greater good. But thank you for explaining that side of it and touching on it. I think that's a nuance in our community that people are just starting to kind of grasp and open their eyes to. So thank you, Grant. Wow. I think you're wanting to chomp at another question.
Well, can you elaborate on what's coming and that issue of the rescue?
Well, our Earth is going through a cycle. It happens every 12,000 years. We also have a 6,000 year cycle. The 6,000 one is wet. It's a water cycle where we're going to flip and the water's going to go everywhere. It'll be wind first. It'll cut through everything. And then the water will engulf the planet. Shortly after that, we will experience. Let me tell you why it's going to happen. Then I'll tell you what's going to happen. Our universe is full of dust, plasma dust. It's everywhere. It covers everything. If you look at the moon and what the astronauts saw, they saw this white powdery dust on top of iron and, soil that's sort of like Georgia, you know, you got that red clay and rocks and everything, but dust covers everything. It covers us. It's incoming all the time. Every single galaxy, whether we can't see it with our optics because our eyesight doesn't allow us to, okay, but every galaxy is connected by plasma finger conduit energy that the dust settles on the energy, and you can see filaments between the galaxies. We're all connected like a neural net, okay. The sun can only, and all the stars in our galaxy can only take so much of that. The dust accumulates, and it gets to the point where it ignites and it blows like a bomb. And you get like a micronova, all stars micronova. They're just now starting to realize that in our community here, they're starting to see the proof of it. The last one that you saw probably was Betelgeuse. You know, I call it Betelgeuse, by the way. It had a micronova. They didn't admit it right away at first, but they're starting to like grudgingly go, yeah, it was a micronova. Okay. We're due. We're overdue. That's the 12,000 year cycle. It's 12,000 years to our sun's imminent blow up of that. But before that happens, other things are going on. Our sun has cycles of low solar activity and high solar activity. We are in now coming into solar maximum. As a matter of fact, in August, you're going to see a huge uptick of it, okay? We have coronal mass ejections all the time. That's where the sun negatively and positively charged together and it blows filaments out. And there's a ton of energy in that. Coronal holes can support that energy and blow it toward us. If we're sun facing and that, you know, that ejection is sun facing, we take the full hit. Our chronosphere, our electromagnetosphere, protects us from it. It throws that energy away from us, okay? And we don't take the full hit from it. But while our magnetosphere is going down, which is at 40% right now, we take huge amounts of hits from it. We also have an electromagnetic current sheet on us right now. The universe has tons and tons of wave magnetic activity, and our galaxy actually has a giant electromagnetic wave coming through us. We're not the only ones being affected. Our entire galaxy is being sluiced right now. When our sun changed its electromagnetic poles, it ignited all the rest of our solar system to do so. We're watching each planet in our system go through that process. Some are faster than others. Others are slow pokey. Neptune just did it. They watched it happen. They're estimating whether Saturn is next or Uranus. Okay. My money's on Saturn. So when these CMEs occur, coronal mass ejections, because there's low level of protection here and they're aided by this electromagnetic current sheet, solar wind, and the effect that our magnetosphere is down, the effects are unbelievably powerful. We had the first shot across our bow was during the Carrington event. We had just had our technology had come up to having telegraphs. You watched every one of those telegraphs burn down, including the offices. It just took them out. It grounded the entire planet at one time. Think about the technology that we have up now. We have satellites up, we have stuff on the ground, all technology, all energy, everything. We solar our houses, all of it. We're about to see, we're expecting, it's gonna happen, a CME of such immense power. And we're talking up in the X-class range with all those other factors hitting in with it, Earth-facing, then it will send us right back to the Flintstones. We will be in, we will have no power, nowhere, no way. And it will burn it up to the point there's no coming back from it. We will not have the ability to reproduce that what we're going to lose. We will be dead grid all over the planet at one time. That effect is so powerful, it can go within 10 miles of our Earth crust. Now, here's the other thing that's happening. While this is all going on, you're seeing upticks and all kinds of weird stuff. Like our Earth is heating up, our mantle is breaking loose. We're now less than 24 hours. We've sped up. It's noticeable. They're clocking it. We're seeing volcanoes going off, erupting, because it causes our planet. We're an electromagnetically charged dipole situation with our sun. When it charges, we gather that energy and we charge right back. That comes in the form of heating, earthquakes, hurricanes, disrupts our weather. I mean, it's huge. We're seeing those upticks now. The more they happen, the more you realize that the big one's coming, okay? You see problems with what happens on the ground here. Our satellites are being affected. Elon Musk sent up some satellites and three of them didn't make it into space because they blew up midair because they were hit by those particles coming in, incoming from a CME. We have problems with our communications, our computers, everything. It's ramping. So probably between now and about 2.5 years from now, you're going to see that happen. That's the first thing that's going to happen. That's serious enough all by itself. But then about 8 years, maybe 10 years after that, we're going to come into that part of the cycle. Our planet wobbles. Our axis is unstable, okay? And it can only do, you know, like a top, it eventually rolls over, okay? Because we're in space and we have other things going on around us, we're going to keep going, but it wobbles to a point where that's where it is. We have proof that they don't really admit to, that this has happened multiple times. Our equator will be in a new place. It will actually move up to where, like if you're mid-United States, the equator is going to be somewhere around there, just above Florida, maybe into Georgia, going around. Okay, we're going to experience not only a water event and a wind event, we're going to cool down. We will, because everything goes up into the atmosphere, we lose the ability to connect to the heat of the sun and we'll go into an ice age. You don't want to be here for that. Not at all. Nobody wants to be here. You won't make it. That's why ET, after that CME and our magnetosphere starts to get stable enough again for them to come back, because they are not here now. Will come back massively. You'll see them land everywhere all over the planet. They'll open the doors and they'll come on, let's go and get as many people off here as they possibly can. They'll be taken to other multiple worlds because that's a lot of people, hopefully. And you'll be given the ability to live out your life and finish what you didn't finish here. This has happened multiple times on this planet. Earth has always been unstable since Mars took the hit. We had a huge planetoid, planet with a bunch of, asteroids behind it, slam into our solar system, kick Mars out of the cat seat and put Earth in it. Earth was in a sister orbit with Mars somewhat. Earth had less gravity, now we have more. And they looked at the situation, they said, well, let's bring them here and let them work it out here. And that's what's going on. That's why.
That reminds me of when I talked to Chris Bledsoe and I wrote the book on music. One of the songs he said I should listen to that actually got me going was Neil Young, After the Gold Rush, the idea that we're treating the world like a gold rush. And when the gold is gone, he says in the song, the silver seas will come and take the chosen ones to another star system. And Neil Young actually wrote that song based upon a theoretical giant wave that takes out California. You talked about the water. Have they described this wave thing to you?
Yes. There are people prepping for this already. Okay. There's a guy that I watch. I find it very interesting that he knows as much as he does. He's a self-taught astronomer and physicist. He was a lawyer. He's that smart. Okay. And he's on the scale of 100, seriously, intelligence. And he's in Arizona because he believes that if he's here for it, that's one of the points where he'd be protected from the giant wave that'll come over. There are other points. There's one in Siberia. Actually, there's a part of the United States that's a pivot point where the planet it's the pivot point while it's flopping over. Every water body there is, when the planet does that, think about it, it's just going to slosh. It's like throwing over a glass of water. It's going to go everywhere. We have, but we're spinning and we have gravity. And so it's just going to throw it all over the whole planet. But before that water reaches you, the wind that it's going to create will just slice everything to ribbons. I mean, ribbons. He talks about it. He's in the New Valley of the Sun in Arizona. And they live in a trailer park because Arizona absolutely owns water rights. And they won't let you do anything that they can't regulate, So they're there camping, but they're getting ready to move to higher ground because they do have a spot where they're going to go where they know they'll be protected. There are other people on this planet that are providing safety for themselves because they know that they're either going to survive it and stay here, which I don't think they've put two and two together yet, or ET is going to come and get them. Whoever's left is going. So.
Wow. So how many times do you figure you've been on craft, or has it gone on since before you were 14? And like, when did they train you as a child?
I went to school with them when I was growing up. And yes, I've been constantly moved around. I went to the Gray's homeworld in the Orion cluster. It's a bigger planet than Earth. It has less gravity. It's really very cool. And I was educated. They needed to make sure that I was able to do what I do now. I didn't remember all of it right away, but I knew something was up because I had too many interests in everything. I drove everybody crazy. I was also, when I was in school, it was kind of hard to make me sit there because I was bored already. I already knew everything they were teaching. So I ended up in the libraries growing up so I could read, at least keep myself occupied. When I came to, when my brain, opened up and I could remember everything, all that training came back to me hard. I think that's why I got physically ill. I had a migraine for days from it. It was something. So,
do you have psychic abilities? Do you have other talents that you picked up from this? And can you describe maybe some of the events that took place around that?
Yeah, I was more or less born psychic. I've always been a weird kid. First time I realized something was up was, I'm very psychic. I could read your mind very young, and I drove my mother crazy. She thought there was something wrong with me. And when I was about 2 years old, I wanted to play hide and seek. And, I was trying to hide from my mother, and we're in Florida, and they have these closets that are high up above the actual closet with doors on them. And I wanted up there so bad because I thought if I get up there, she's never going to find me. And I kept thinking and thinking and thinking. And the next thing I know, I was up there. I went up. I levitated myself up into there. That was a big deal. I worked on it. I was like, oh, I could do this. And I would move things around. I'm telekinetic. I was in a library once, the University of Miami. My dad used to go there for referencing stuff. And he'd leave me in the library while he went off and did, you know, other things he was doing at the university. And there was this huge reference medical book that I wanted really bad. And it was in the middle of two tables. And I'm like trying to reach it. I can't. And I'm afraid to get up on the chair and crawl on the table. That would have been wrong. So I was reaching, and it just slid right to my hand. And I thought, oh, this is very cool. And so I practiced a lot. I've had a major ability with that. Once when I was in my 20s, I was painting the hallway that goes down to the basement, you know, the stair hallway. And I was done and I had the paint cans, but the lids were downstairs. So I'm holding the paint cans and I went to walk off the top step to go down and I never made it to the second step. I went straight out into the air. Wow. And instantly somehow managed to control the situation. And I just slowed down and I made it down past the turn and I landed on my feet and only spilled a little bit of the paint. And I was like, thank God I can, you know, it was really, really cool. I'm good at psychometry. This is the only thing my mom ever did with me that made me wonder, well, what do you get and what don't you get? She had a couple friends, best friends, and they'd be over all the time. And one day she said, will you do me a favor? And I said, what? And she said, show her. I'm like, oh. So she would hand me an object that belonged to her and I could read her, you know, by touching it. And I would tell her from where that object's been. I could see, you know, where it laid, who had it, who it belonged to, stuff like that. I would tell her. And then one day I woke up and realized I was seeing things, you know, and I would lay there at night. I see in the dark really, really well. And I started seeing energy patterns. I see your auras. I see all kinds of stuff. And I realized, oh my God. And then people that I loved who had passed away start coming and talking to me. And I'm like, okay, you know, this is weird. And so, yeah, I'm a weird kid. I have a lot of abilities, a lot.
You worked on the book with Preston Dennett and he does a lot of out-of-body experience. Do you do that as well?
Yes. Yeah. I can remember.
Have you met Destin or Preston and in out-of-body state? Have you guys met together? Yes.
Yeah, he didn't tell me he was going to do it. I was, I do CE5s in Georgia, okay, and way back in the day. And one of the members is had some issues and he was calling me in the middle of the night and asking me questions. I was doing mediumship for him. He had a couple of relatives, whatever. And he called me at 3:30 in the morning. I wasn't home. We were in Airbnb because our house, Michael, peeled us like a banana, okay. And so I was there and all of a sudden I turned and I saw Preston standing there grinning at me. I'm like, oh my God, you know? And I said, I can't talk to you right now. I got Robert on the phone. It upset him for some reason. And he went back to his body. I called him very first thing the next morning. I said, you showed up. And he said, I did. And he was playing devil's out. He wanted the truth out of me. Okay. And I said, yeah. And he said, Dolly, what did you tell me? And I said, I couldn't talk to you. Rob was on the phone with me. And he visibly went, oh, I said, why? He said, I thought you said you were being robbed. And I went, oh, okay. I chose about 2 or 3 weeks later and I showed up in his room. I didn't realize I was going to make it to his bedroom. I showed up in the middle of the night one night looking at him and he just woke up and went, oh, he freaked out. And I can, so we, every now and then we agreed date and time, place, that kind of thing. And we'll OBE together just because it's good practice, you know?
Nicole, go ahead.
I've heard Preston tell this from the other, from his point of view. So I was just loving hearing Dolly's side of it. Cause yeah, that's just, I've talked about this behind the scenes about people who can astral and OBE together. And it's so rare and yeah, it's amazing. I'm glad Preston is progressing with that. And it's you. I didn't know who you were talking about. And now I know it's you. No, I love that. And yeah, I can see Preston's shocked face too. Like that's what got me.
Yeah. he reacts amazingly. You know, he's real emotional. You know, you can tell whatever's on his mind. There's no doubt about it. You know what it is. Yeah.
That's great. And yeah. I guess my question with that is, do you guys do work together in the astral plane? I know Preston has talked about the healing he does on the other side. So do you do that as well?
It's sort of. This would become real personal for me to talk about, so I'm going to give you an overview of it so you understand. Mm-hmm. People, places, and things are in our lives, and sometimes things are happening around us, and I see people all the time, and so I will tell him when things are happening and say, you need to deal with this right now. And he goes and does that. That's a type of work. Mm-hmm. A couple of times he's called me and said, hey, what's up? You know, what's going on with you? And he'll see something that I'm not paying attention to, and I'll go and work on it. When things are happening in the world, we both see it pretty much at the same time. He's precog as well as I am. And we do the best we can. I can't alter the future, but I can talk about it. And I do, often I do, especially to the people that's involved. So that kind of thing.
I love it. Grant, did you want to jump in? Because the next question I have is going to just turn us
on. Okay. I think I know where you're going, but let me ask one question about you said you're from a family of has experiences. I think it was your father that had, can you talk
yes.
about that?
Yes.
How far does this go back in generations for other people? Has this been going on for like 100 years, 150 years long?
It's been going on way all the way back to the beginning. All of us, all human beings are psychic. You're born with the equipment. You have a pineal gland in your brain. Yeah. It's actually constructed just like your eyeball. It's the same thing without a lens in it. They know that it transmits that, you know, you think in alpha, beta, theta, gamma, and delta, and you can hear it as well as transmit out from it. We're not real used to doing that anymore. We used to only communicate psychically with one another, but for some reason, this group is not doing that. Okay. Okay, I lost track. What was the, oh, my dad. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, it is generational. Yes, they know you from way back to the beginning. They do track families. They track all families, as a matter of fact. Nobody's excluded. But some families are genetically more strong in having children who wake up and are very psychic. It's like geniuses. You know, some people have an average IQ and some people are off scale. And they very much track that ability through the generations. I come from a family with a really strong genetic component in there for that. And I know all about my genetic history way back. And interesting enough, I had my DNA pulled and I found out that I'm very mixed ethnically. I have almost every star seed type of people on this planet. I'm Swedish Same, I'm Russian Same, I'm Norwegian Same. I have Amazonian tribal people. I have Incan. I have Cherokee. I have, wow. As a matter of fact, my great granny grandma was an Ostahatchee. Her name was Effie Wo. I have Japanese blood, Korean blood, Chinese blood, Mongolian blood. I have Basque. I have English, Irish. I mean, if you were to ask me, what's my ethnicity, I'd say Hans 57 Mad Dog Mix.
I was going to say.
What I know for a fact is that if everybody had their DNA really looked into, you'd realize that you're pretty much the same. We're all human beings. We're ethnically human. We change color or we look a little bit different depending on where we're living for generations. We adapt to the environments that we're in. That's why some have more melanin in their skin, whatever. But we all still have all the same blood. You peel our skin, we're exactly alike on the inside. We all have the same DNA. We're human, okay? We are related, physically related to the grays, the tall whites. There's a whole bunch of them. Most everything in the universe, all entities that are physical, corporeal, DNA physical, are human genotypes. They all have legs, they have arms, they have brains, they have eyes, they eat, they sleep, they do everything, procreate, all of it. We just look different from one another. The tall grays have changed quite a bit from us because of the environment and the evolution of their their genes. And one, you know, people say, well, why don't they have hair? Well, I can tell you why, because I'm sort of experiencing this now. When I fly, I'm electrically charged all the time. It's like getting electrolysis everywhere. I have no hair on my body anymore. And my hair is going very, very sparse. I'm about to lose all of it. And it's because of years and years and years of being in that environment. I don't, just accepting it now. Okay.
That was a question. That was one of the questions on Facebook I asked was, I mean, if they, the grays are so advanced, how come they don't have hair? Because, you know, most men and women would want hair. I mean, it's like if you're advanced, you would figure a way to get people to have hair. But so I'm glad you answered that question. Is it reincarnation? Is that part of it too, in terms of?
Yes.
You go back with the, are you connected to these grays back in other lifetimes?
Yes. I'm actually, we all in and out all over the universe, okay? Lifetime to lifetime to lifetime. We're all as old as the universe. We all live together in source. Our consciousness is what drives this body that you're in. Okay. And so we know each other, we're all together, but inside source, you can't physically learn what we've learned in the physical realms. Okay. We become wise. We grow up, we assimilate knowledge. We wear it like it's clothing to us, and it strengthens our consciousness. It helps us evolve up. Once we leave here, once we graduate from this, we can move up into the astral realms. In other words, the different dimensions. Okay. And there are lots of us who already have. There's a lot. The numbers are infinitesimal. I can't tell you how many entities there really are, because you can't. It's unending. But this is the process by which we all exist. We're part of a giant, if you wanted to call it a God, fine, but they refer to it as the all mind. The entire universe is a mind, and it thinks, and every element in it's connected and has the ability to remember and know things. We don't associate that right now because we're not wide open psychic, okay? And it's really hard to hear the universe talking when you can't hear it, you know? The main reason that ET has agreed to, you know, give me this opportunity, because I'm very passionate about it, is that everybody just needs to finish waking up here and quit being, walk out of the environment that we're living in. We live in a fear-based, paranoid, angry, vicious, fighting, okay? And it cancels this out, and it has for centuries, okay? And we need to go back to what we were meant to be. We need to wake up. We need to learn how to use our abilities and quit accepting the fact that we're here like this. Say no, walk away, turn it off, meditate, you know, center yourself. There's an old saying, okay, Buddha said it. You have to go within to go without, okay? Who you are, your core essence, your consciousness that's indwelling your physical body is your core. And you have to go within to see what's out there, okay? Absolutely. Our DNA is our physical key to being here. When we project out of source, DNA brings us to the physical realm. Your DNA is part of who you are. When you pass away and this body deteriorates and everything, the energy that creates this body belongs to you. I like to call it prana, because I like the Vishnu, and I like to call it prana. But that prana, after 3 days, releases and it goes back to you, and you recycle with it over and over and over again. You can recycle with it here. You can recycle with it anywhere else in the universe. It's yours to command, and you decide what you're doing, where you're going. We are all autonomous beings. We all have the right to follow our path and learn as we need to learn to ascend.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, Nicole, you want to change the subject. So let's go. I know where you're going to go. So let's go there.
Well, yeah, I think we are kind of closing in on time, so I can change it a little bit. But Dolly, there's a case that I've followed for years and years, and it's, I came across it through a researcher friend of mine who actually knew the author, and the author is John Vasquez, and he was stationed at Fort Benning. And I know you worked at Fort Benning, and you may not be able to talk about things, but I just wondered the time frame I think you spent there, and the time frame of this case was like the late 70s or early 80s. And
I was there off and on.
And okay. I just didn't know if you had ever heard anything about this incident with John Vasquez and these troops at Fort Benning, where they were either mass abducted or fired on a craft, and systematically they've all passed away. And so there's really nobody left to ask. And I ask people who get stationed there if there's ever like a lore or if there's hearsay, things like that. And they do say there's whispers, but yeah. Have you ever heard of this incident?
Oh boy. Yes.
Okay.
And oh, I got to be careful how I put this to you. Okay.
Yeah, and we can even table it for later if you want, because I do like giving
yeah. yeah. You know that the governments of this world are not exactly our best friends, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. And this is an incident that was generated completely by them. Mm-hmm. And it was a first try at something. Okay. And I'll leave it at that. And I'll talk to you about it, and I need to figure out how much of this I can let out and how much I cannot. Fort Benning is a pivotal base. It is 300 miles big, square miles. Mm-hmm. It is third largest base in the country, and it's got a lot of stuff going on. And I have to be careful because I have major NDAs out there that I can't release.
The one snippet that I think is interesting that maybe people could associate with Fort Benning is that that is where lots of training situations happen.
Correct.
If we choose to collaborate with other military groups, those troops would come to Fort Benning and receive our style of military training.
Correct. So
follow that line of who was trained at Fort Benning and who is now in South America. You know, there's
It's just not South America though. It's
right.
And about that. Right? Yeah. There are other countries involved. Absolutely.
Next time or behind the scenes. Okay. But yeah, I knew you might know. So I had to ask you. So thank you. Thank
you're welcome. You're welcome.
How about that one, Grant? I got a hook.
There you go. Well, let me go, because one of the last questions I want to ask is I want to get your opinion on what you think is going on. You brought up the government. Has the government been watching you? What do they really know? Who has the secret? What do you think about the latest disclosure stuff? Go there for a little bit and talk to us about that. What's your opinion about what's
going on? Yes, they know who I am. I'm watched. They stay away from me. I'm protected. They found out a couple of times it's not a good idea to get too close to me. The governments of the world have known what's coming at us for a long time. And they made the decision that only a certain amount of the population is going to survive. And they've decided who that is already. It's the elite 1%. They have, if you look at it critically, you know that every base underground, everything is geared for survival. They have seed depositories all over the world. They have everything is in place. Everything that's going on to us all right now is them removing us from fighting them for it when the time comes. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Okay. So what's the whole procedure now going on in Washington? What's that all about in terms of what
they're called, doing? It's called smoke and mirrors. They're keeping everybody, they're keeping everybody from zeroing in on the real issue. Absolutely.
Wow. Absolutely. So you think this is a worldwide issue, not just a U.S. issue?
Correct.
World government issues.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Wow. What do you say to that, Nicole?
It sounds like a world rich people issue.
Well, they need financing. That's true. They've been enlisted. Yes.
But would this mean that you're part of the 1%? Because you're
no, absolutely not. No.
But you're being rescued. I mean, you're one of the ones that's going to survive.
ET is doing it, not the government. The government is not working with ET, just so you know that. That is a lie. It is a propagated lie, period. ET has nothing to do with the world governments, nothing. They thought about it. There was talks with the government, with Eisenhower, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
And nope. Nope, they're delusional. They believe their own BS, and no, they're absolutely outright evil, and they're not playing with them. So,
how many races are here? Are we you deal with the grays, and why are the grays not from Zeta Reticuli? The ones, are there grays in all different planets around?
There are three or four different ethnicities of grays, and yes, some are from the Reticuli galaxy. It's all in systems. All those are in our galaxy. Okay.
Yeah.
We're all in it together. And the ones that I know about myself, probably I know about 12, but I only closely work with the grays and with the tall white. But I've seen others. They're here, they're around. But right now they're not here because everybody bugged out about a year and a half ago. The mass exodus began. They're in safety right now. They're not staying here for this, not at all. Would you? I mean, they can't fly here. Every crash that you see from ET is pretty much generated because our magnetosphere is down and the magnetic fields are fluctuating. They go straight down to the ground. It's dangerous. And it's to the point now where they can't fly here. They have drones flying here and they go down. They have sentinels here and they're far enough above that they're not wholly 100% effective, but their systems can be decimated by CME as well. So they're just hanging out and waiting for it to happen. Once it calms down and clears for them, then they'll come back and come get us. But it's gone to that point.
Do you think the military is trying to shoot them down? Is that part of what they're trying to do? Or are they, how much information do they have about the technology, the government?
They have it. They've been back in engineering it for quite some time.
Okay.
And they know a lot. And that's so involved. It would take me an hour to explain that to you. So, yeah.
Wow.
That'll be part two.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Part two. You just did part 200 with Preston.
Oh no. He started talking about us making another book and I'm like, really? Seriously? You know?
That's so, part of Preston's gift is the book writing. So
he does it all the time.
That's what we usually ask Preston if he's a millionaire from all his book deals. Yeah.
I have a huge idea about that. I think that being an author is not that lucrative. Okay. He's always had a second job and he just finally retired.
We're happy for Preston.
So, but writing is his love and his gift. And when he wasn't working his job, he's sitting at a desk writing. So, and he's still that way. Yeah.
Wonderful. Oh, you too. Are we ready to wrap it up? I think we are.
Let's hear about the book one more time, the name of the book. And did you talk to other people? If people want to contact you, is there a way they can contact you?
Yeah, I'm beginning to do that now. I just wanted to get the information out first and I'm starting to branch out in what I'm doing. I have a YouTube channel. All my videos are up on it. I just put two more up. It's at Dolly Safran on YouTube. You can find me that way. So that's what I got going on. I'm on Facebook and I do talk to people in Messenger and on Facebook if you want to friend me or whatever. So that's how I'm speaking to people right now. Preston has a lot of my information and knows how to contact me. If you go through him, he can get to me and present you to me. He's at Preston Dennett online. It'll take you to his sites. He's at Weebly, Preston Dennett at Weebly.com. And he's got 29 books. Symmetry, a UFO Adventure is the latest one. He has two more right behind it coming. He's excited about that right now. And that's how you can get a hold of everything.
And your book?
Symmetry. That's the one that Preston wrote for me. And it's called Symmetry, a True UFO Adventure. It's available on Amazon. You can get it in either audio, not audio yet. Kindle? That way, or hardcover. He's having somebody read it right now for the audiobooks.
Wow.
If you go to a dealer, they can order it for you and send it to you that way too.
Wow. Right. And you haven't made $1 million yet.
No, no, no.
Not yet. We need Oprah to induct ufology books into her book club.
I would love that. I'm kind of hoping
somewhere, you guys, but thank you so much, Dolly.
You're welcome, Nicole.
We will chat again soon. We'll have a part two and probably a part three. And I want to keep up with you after your big move. And you can
talk
about Bigfoot next time.
I know. If you ever want a vacation, you're invited to come visit. Okay. Oh,
thank you so much.
Okay, you're welcome.
Get Bigfoot to help you unpack those
boxes. I wish. I know. It's a big job. Thank you very much, Tom. I really enjoyed this. Thank you.
Thank you, Grant. We'll talk soon.
Beautiful. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Grant.
You bet. Thank you for sharing your story with us.
You're welcome. Okay.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye. Bye.
That's this week's episode of the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. I'm your host, Grant Cameron, hoping that you will join me for upcoming episodes. Links to my YouTube interviews, books, and my Facebook sites are in the show notes. If you love the podcast or learn something valuable, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, or give a review on today's episode. If you would like a certain paranormal subject dealt with in the future, please let us know. Until next time, watch this space, and thank you so much for listening.